This is the Generations Broadcast, Kevin Swanson, homeschool dad. Coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Dave Buhner, also a homeschool dad, in studio today. And friends, we talk about what's going on in education about us, because education is sort of like D-Day in the world of the world youth. Actually, it's Omaha Beach on D-Day. I mean, this is really a point at which the battle wages most strongly. And if you're going to lose the battle, you're going to lose it right there in education. If education is based in a materialistic form of worldview, that is, it doesn't allow for a supernatural. If you're into a school and the school says supernatural, not allowed, we don't bring up the supernatural in history, in science classes, in literature class. We don't bring up the supernatural at all. We will not act as if the supernatural, that is God himself, has anything to say about anything in ethics. He has anything to do with history, has anything to do with science. Once you bring God out of the metaphysic, out of our theory of reality, friends, you got the wrong worldview. That's why, for the most part, public schools have the wrong worldview. I mean, it's the bottom line is they don't allow God to be mentioned as relevant in history and science. If that be the case, then it is a naturalism that is being taught, not a supernaturalism. And that's a difference of worldviews. If you're a Christian and you're being sure that your children are carefully discipled in a naturalistic way of thinking about origins, about science, and about history, then friends, you're giving your children a pagan education. And they're being raised as humanists and materialists or naturalists, not as supernaturalists. Okay, worldviews are important in education. And the reason why the millennial generation and the Mosaic generation is walking away from the faith to the tune of 85, 95, 97%. The recent number is 97%, is because they're trained, they're discipled not to be Christians or to believe in God as the supernatural hand in history and science. Okay, that's a big reason. I mean, there's maybe a few other reasons too, but that's a huge reason. The breakdown of family relationships, the breakdown of fatherhood, all these things play into it as well. All right, now here's an article, Dave, from the Christian Post referring to the White House petition calling for the total ban of creation science, intelligent design from schools. I thought that there was no mention of creation at all in public schools today. Evidently, there are still some who teach a little bit of it. 13% of high school biology teachers apparently advocate creationism or intelligent design by spending at least 1 hour of class time presenting it in a positive light. Okay, so that's 13%. 1 hour, right.
So they show a documentary.
So in 12 years, in 50,000 hours of public school indoctrination, they're getting 1 hour.
So they get to see one documentary.
They're getting 1 hour.
On intelligent
design. And 87% of these teachers are not providing that. But evidently, there's still some Christian teachers in the public schools who are trying to bring in something related to God. And that's brave. That's courageous of them. You got to commend some of that.
Yeah.
But 1 hour out of 50,000 is, I mean, that's, what is that, 0.001% of the time?
Well,
my guess is the average student's not going to pay attention and really pick up on that.
No, they're not, because the time that actually happens in class is only a fraction of the education of a child, the training of the child. When you throw in the billions and billions of dollars at the Smithsonian and the Museum of Natural History and the TV programs and the Discovery Channel and all the other propaganda thrown at them, that 1 hour is like 0.00001% of the influence on that child.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and that's because they're not Christian schools. The schools are defined as humanist schools, okay, according to the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that you cannot develop a form of education that is akin to Proverbs 1:7. You cannot fear God. You cannot worship him. You cannot praise him. You cannot thank him. You cannot acknowledge him.
That's shocking.
In the public school classrooms.
That's shocking. Christians must get their kids out of these humanist schools and get them into Christian education immediately. That's shocking, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying it finally, Dave. But you know what? Christians apparently don't fear God very much, and they don't want to teach their kids a knowledge that is based in the fear of God very much. So, you know, there's a lot of fake Christians out there who have never really agreed with Proverbs 1:7. They don't really agree with that little epistemological point. Beginning of knowledge concerning anything is the fear of God. They don't believe that point. So because of that, friends, a lot of people are signing up to a secular humanist classical form of education, and that's being taught everywhere. But we're recommending that you teach your children a basically Christian approach to science and origins and all the rest. And Dave, you know, this creation issue has really been kind of the watershed issue
for education in our day. I think it's a watershed issue for the entire worldview of the population. Once you dismiss with a Christian view of creation, you're going to sign up for an evolutionary perspective. And evolution, of course, is one of the weakest viewpoints of science that's out there. In fact, I think we need a whole new paradigm of science. We need Christians to get into a laboratory and bring out their Bibles and start working on a whole new different form of science and a whole new different form of teaching, of education in the science departments. We need to revolutionize the way that we look at science. Dave, there have been Copernican revolutions in the area of science over time. Thankfully, the Reformation brought about a little bit of a Copernican revolution in the area of science, and that's how you get Newton, Pascal. That's how you get some of the best forms of science and the most developed forms of science we ever had. It came out of the Reformation. It came out of men who acknowledged the fear of God constantly. We're constantly worshiping and praising God all the way through. You'll find that in just about every form of science. People who developed chemistry, physics, astronomy, et cetera, were people who acknowledged God and came out of the Reformation, which, by the way, was one of the strongest Christian movements in the history of mankind or the history of the Christian faith. And so I'm excited about what happened with the Copernican Revolution brought about by Newton and Pascal and others. But then you start to get into the Darwins and the humanist science of the 1800s and the 1900s. And this is a new Copernican revolution, and it's bringing in a paradigm that is counterproductive to science. And let me tell you this, Dave, the more and more I think about evolution, the more and more I think that it is perverting science, corrupting it. It is perverting science. Now, they laugh at us and they say, who in the world would not believe in evolution? Well, that's because their paradigm of science includes a form of science that doesn't involve any evidence. No evidence whatsoever for any transitional fossils. They have no mechanism whatsoever except this crazy little punctuated equilibrium that nobody really understands. It's not a mechanism that can be described as a natural mechanism whatsoever because nobody has a clue what it is. So they have no mechanism. They have no evidence. It's never been repeated in a laboratory anywhere. And Dave, the only form of measurement they have is a carbon dating form and a uranium form of dating that yields results that vary anywhere from 100,000 years or 10,000 years to 10 billion years, depending on the data point that you get on this rock or that rock. And, you know, they'll assume something's 4 billion years old, put it in a laboratory. It turns out it's 10,000 years old. They'll take a fossilized rock of something that's supposed to be, you know, 20 years old. It turns out that's 180,000 years old. Dave, the dating methods are utter foolishness, utter foolishness. There's so much variation in dating methods with uranium dating and carbon dating that it would be like this, Dave, going down to the post office and saying this box weighs, according to my scale, it weighs anywhere between 6 ounces and 6 billion tons. Can I put a 25-cent stamp on it? Now, what would the post office tell you, Dave, if you said that?
No.
Yeah, they'd say, I'm sorry, but you have a bad measurement device. And what if you're doing some form of science where you're working with some kind of design of circuit boards or what have you, and your calipers will read anywhere from, you know, 0.1 inches on the width of that circuit board to 64 inches, okay? Your calipers just a little bit non-calibrated today, and it's giving you a wide range of gauge repeatability. Okay, Dave? What would you conclude about that pair of calipers? What would you say about that?
I can't get a repeated measurement. I'd say they're pretty useless.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now let's transfer that to this crazy, stupid area of dating found in evolution. And Dave, you know what's happening with science? What's happening with science is people sitting in these evolutionary laboratories and learning biology from a distinctively evolutionary, naturalistic perspective, Dave. I think they're just becoming irrational. I think generation by generation, scientists will be irrational, and you're going to wind up with some crazy, crazy science.
They're already irrational. They're claiming things like global warming. They're claiming. Science is.
It's global cooling now, Dave. It was global cooling.
Oh, cool.
Warming yesterday. It's cooling today.
Cool. Yeah.
Climate change.
Yeah. It's, you know, the issue
whatever
of our
happens
time.
To be. Yeah. Whatever theory has rolled off of somebody who has no idea how to do science that's repeatable, that blocks certain confounding factors in experiment and realizes that there is all kinds of risk and all kinds of probabilities that work in these inductive studies. Now, most of these environmental scientists are irrational. And they don't have a clue how to do science anymore. And Dave, I think it's because the modern science paradigm has been corrupted.
I think the definition of science
since Isaac Newton and Pascal and others were doing work.
Right. There are whole courses, doctoral degrees given in the philosophy of science. But if we go back to what science basically is at its root, it's the scientific method in application, right? So you have a scientific method. Scientific method comes to us by Christians, by people like Roger Bacon, and then systematized by Francis Bacon. No relation as far as I know. But the three planks that Francis Bacon particularly wrote on was that because God himself is a God who is unchangeable and he created a creation with order, that we could determine the future based on looking at the past. And from that, he postulated that we could predict the future when we look at the past and we see something that's repeatable. It's a one-time event. You can't repeat it. Therefore, it's not in the realm of the scientific method. Ergo, it's not science. Yeah. It's an observation. It could be a true observation. This is important. Not everything that's true belongs to science. Mm-hmm. Science can only look at one piece of truth.
Yeah.
It has to be repeatable. It has to be verifiable. If you see it and I don't, well, you may have a true observation, but we can't put it in the realm of science. More people have to see it than just one. That protects us from you having special visions and the like. And the third is, so it has to be observable. Oh, it also has to be observable.
Yeah. So you have to be able to see it.
You have to be able to see it. You can't just, you have to be able to measure it. You have to use somehow or other. It has to be translated into the human psyche through senses or instruments that we can read with our senses so that we can see it or hear it or feel it or taste it. Somebody else can see it, feel it, hear it, or taste it and sees and verifies the same thing. And we can repeat it. All of that makes the scientific method. The scientific method's huge. It's strong. It's the basis for our technological revolution. It's the reason why we have phones and light bulbs and the internet and houses that stand and bridges that don't fall. The scientific method's wonderful. Now, when you pervert that and you take the word and you say, well, you know, once upon a time there was nothing and then nothing had a flaw and that flaw exploded everywhere. Now we have everything and they call that science. now we've left all of the scientific method behind and we moved totally to mythology.
Yeah. Okay, friends. Apparently the White House is considering this petition on being sure that every school in America teaches evolution. And personally, I think they've already made tremendous progress. It's just that they don't want that last little guy who's taking 1 hour of time and bringing in a little bit of a God-oriented supernatural perspective into the classroom. They're saying, oh, if there's one little guy left who's saying, hey, the dude's nude. There's one little guy in the emperor's new clothes procession who's saying, ah, the dude's nude. The emperor has no clothes. We got to silence him because, you know, the truth should never, ever, ever get out. Ever, ever. Especially if you're dealing in the area of falsehood. And that, my friends, is what's going on everywhere, all over the place. And at any time you have one little guy standing up saying, hey, here's the truth, that really irritates the propagandizing machine for the emperor's new clothes bunch. All right, be back in just a moment with a little bit more on what's going on with education and the White House. Barack Obama has some controversial things to say about, well, religious schools, Christian schools. Be back in just a moment. Folks, this is your host, Kevin Swanson, and I've attended the Renewing the Family Camp every year for the last 8 years. This camp has been a tremendous encouragement to my whole family. Out at the Maranatha Camp in western Nebraska, we enjoy great times of teaching, worship, outdoor sports, fellowship, water skiing, climbing walls, ropes courses, and skeet shooting. You can't beat the rates as low as $192 for your whole family for the whole week. This year, I will be speaking with Nathan Clark George, one of my family's favorite Christian musicians. Nathan is a regular guest on this program and will provide a concert for us as well. Check out our website at renewingthefamily.com. That's renewingthefamily.com. Back on the Generations broadcast, Kevin Swanson here, commenting on what's going on with the public schools today. And public schools becoming increasingly secularized. And of course, you have a government today pretty much everywhere that does not appreciate the teaching of creation in the public schools. And yet, evolution has no basis, has no evidence. It has never been repeated in a laboratory. It's a total guesswork. And when they come down to the dating methods all over the map, Dave. It is amazing how much contradiction occurs in the dating methods. I mean, you talk about radiometric dating. You talk about different other forms of dating. There is no good way to date it. And you know, the other side just doesn't realize that they don't have any evidence. They don't.
we cannot prove that a rock turned into a human being or inanimate matter turned into a human being that moves and has personality and emotions and has a sense of morality, et cetera, by total chance in a total chance universe, by no mechanism or a mechanism nobody's ever, ever, ever defined. And there's no evidence anywhere of significant moves in the transitional forms from one species to another. On and on and on and on. We have nothing, 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 nothing. And yet the Emperor's New Clothes Project is rolling along, baby. Continues to roll.
Right. Right now we're confounding two issues. One is the age of the Earth and the other is evolution. But they're basically the same issue. They're both the abandonment of the scientific method and calling it science and then forcing it on everybody, saying you're going to believe the myth of the day. You're going to bow down and worship this Nebuchadnezzar. And, you know, if you don't, there'll be real problems if you don't. Kevin, we talk about the dating methods, and yet the dating methods, as you said, you don't get the same numbers doing the same test repeatedly. It fails a repeatable test. But there's the problem is it's like a ruler, and there's now 1,000 rulers in the drawer. And some of the rulers are very elastic. You know, you pick them up, and what looked like a 1 inch is actually like a foot, and you pick up another one, and it shrinks, and it looks more like a centimeter. But they're all over the place. And we have radiometric dating methods. Those happen to be the ones that the quote-unquote new scientists are after. But we have polonium halos that show that granites were formed instantly, not over a long period of time. We have amount of helium in the atmosphere that absolutely does not match what we would expect. There were methods like the amount of dust on the moon, amount of moon dust. There are all kinds of methods. There are literally hundreds of methods. And what we find is when you take the preferred method, because it gives the long age of the Earth that the new scientists prefer, because they have to have a long age of the Earth in order for evolution to happen, because evolution has to happen very, very slowly, and you can't do that. So what we're going to do is we'll put a magic thing called lots of time. So they need that. They're going to choose the ruler that'll give them the result. The problem is it doesn't so much of the time. It's not repeatable. We take a new rock that's formed out of a volcano, and this has happened on several occasions, and you send it to the lab, and you say, okay, use your favorite radiometric dating method on this rock and tell me how old the rock is. First question they ask is, how old do you think it is? Well, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Okay, so now they have to do it from just the data. And they end up with this rock that's a couple days old, and they end up dating it at billions of years old. Well, we know when the rock was formed. Mm-hmm. We know when it was made, and they're wrong. Yeah. And they're so far wrong to be laughable. Yeah. And it's this kind of thing happens over and over again. So why now would we trust them?
At that point, a scientist would say the gauge is not well calibrated, period.
Well, we would say there's a problem with the method.
It's a bad gauge. It will not accurately give us a measurement. And so if that be the case, what do? You throw it away.
What
you throw it away,
or
you don't use it,
or you figure out what's wrong with it. Now, half lives should be a very good predictor of time, but we don't know several things. One is we don't know the starting point. We don't know the starting conditions. The assumption is, like in a uranium lead decay, that you started out with all uranium and you're going to go all the way to lead. Well, how do you know that? How do you know you didn't have 50% uranium, 50% lead when you began? And if you don't know the starting conditions, knowing the ratio of uranium to lead won't tell you how old the rock is. What it'll reveal is the ratio of uranium to lead. Now, that's verifiable. That's observable. That's repeatable. Now we've got science. We know the ratio. That doesn't tell us the age of the rock.
It would be nice to get a little honesty out of scientists today. They're just being dishonest, and they're not willing to come forward and say, here's our problems. This is really it. We really have nothing here. And I mean, yet there's so much dogmatism everywhere. Their dogmatism is not measured by humility. It's not measured by truth. And they're not willing to. Why? Because they're ultimately controlled by a worldview that says there cannot be a God. The only way this could have happened is by total chance, because God is not a factor in history or science. And by the way, the theistic evolutionists that try to kowtow to the evolutionary scientists are not making anybody happy. They're not making biblical creationists happy, and they're certainly not making the naturalistic scientists happy, because naturalistic scientists are in the process of apostasy. That's exactly what the Western world's been trying to do for the last 200 years since Darwin. I mean, come on! I mean, that's the real goal here. The goal is to apostatize from the Christian faith and to get rid of the 2,000 years of the fixed and the final, as Dewey would put it. Friends, you need to get a copy of my book, Apostate, where I talk about the history of the philosophies brought out by Darwin, Dewey, and others. in the effort to apostatize from the Christian faith. This has been the agenda. And these poor little Christian theistic evolutionists that are trying to run around and kowtow and make everybody happy, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry, but you're never going to make the apostates happy. You're probably just going to continue to give them more ammunition to do what they're trying to do, and that is to cut God out of the metaphysic and cut God entirely out of Origins and cut him out of the creation of man, because if you got him in the creation of man, you got to deal with the ethics and so forth and so on. So man is trying to displace God out of the metaphysic piece by piece and piece by piece until God's no longer a factor. And I'm sorry, but theistic evolution is not going to win any favors anywhere. All right, now. Here's another story that we get from, I think this is the Christian Post. Obama is out offending Catholics in the UK, saying that religious schools are divisive. Apparently, Barack Obama, the president of the United States, is out in Northern Ireland right now for the G8 summit. And I don't know what he's doing talking about schooling, but Obama made what is described as an alarming call for an end to Catholic education, in spite of the fact that it is considered a critical component of the church. In front of an audience of about 2,000 young people, including many Catholics, Obama claimed that Catholic education divides people, blocks peace, according to the Scottish Catholic Observer. If towns remain divided, if Catholics have their schools and buildings, and Protestants have theirs, we can't see ourselves in one another, and fear or resentment are allowed to harden. That too much encourages division and discourages cooperation. And Dave, I guess the solution for Obama is going to be the public schools.
Yes. Religion divides. The Christian religion does divide. It divides sheep from goats, wheat from tares. Yes, it absolutely does.
And
he's right.
And the humanist schools do the same thing. Except here's what the humanist schools do. They take nice little Christian kids who are part of Christian families, and they divide those kids from their Christian families and from the Christian faith, and they put them into the humanist faith. Right. That's what happens. I mean, let's face it. Maybe not in every case. Again, I'm sure there are going to be some people writing into the program. They're going to say, now, wait. My kid's attending the public schools, and it all turned out very well. Thank you very much. But, Dave, I mean, we're looking at tens of millions. I mean, why is it that 97% of the Mosaic generation has walked away from the Christian faith when it comes to absolutes? Only 0.5% believe in absolutes, down from 14% amongst their parents. So of the 14% of Christian households out there who still believe in Christian absolutes, okay, something like God exists, God is the source of reality, God is the source of truth, and God is the source of ethics, there is an absolute source of truth and ethics. Okay, those people, there was 14% of American families that believe that kind of thing, and only 0.5% of their Mosaic kids still believe that, meaning you've got a 97% decrease in those who believe in absolutes, which means that the worldview of the public schools must have made an impact, okay? And you say, well, and then there's some, you know, 3% are going to say, but yeah, but 3% of our kids have turned out okay. 3% turned out okay. 97% apostasy rate. And nobody should stand up on a radio show somewhere and say, I think there's a problem. Houston, we have a problem. These public schools are dividing. They're dividing. They have a different worldview than Christians. And they're destroying the Christian faith piece by piece. Yeah, education is not neutral, friends. It's not. It's not. There's good education. There's bad education. We're in a fight over the hearts and the minds of the next generation. And I hope that there's a few Christians out there that wake up and maybe win in the generations of their kids and grandkids.
Kevin, one of the presuppositions that's being put forth here is that division is bad. Actually, division's good.
Didn't Jesus say he came to bring division?
He did. Now, you're talking about human division, but let's talk about, you know, division and creation. There is several days of creation in which God is separating the land from the water, for instance. Separation is good. In thermodynamics, we got to separate the hot from the cold in order to get work done. If everything's the same temperature, we don't get any thermodynamic work out of it. Besides that, your food, if the hot is not hot and the cold, is not so good. Jesus spits that out of his mouth. He says, you know, that lukewarm stuff, can't stand it. So, you know, we're not against division. And then there's the being holy, which means not being profane, profane being everyday use, holy being sacred use. And we're to be holy, set aside for sacred use. You know, division's a very good thing. And if we're dividing over the right things, the idea that unity for the sake of unity is correct is it's a fallacy, and we see it in Christendom a lot. Well, why can't we just be unified with all these people? Well, we have really substantial, important differences. It turns out that since Trent, the Roman Catholic Church has affirmed that the works will get you into heaven. Well, it turns out that Paul the Apostle Paul really doesn't like that very much, and we believe that he's representing Christ by his words, especially in the book of Galatians. And, you know, we can't go along with that. It's untrue. We have to divide. There's a case in which division within the church is good and necessary.
Especially when you're in the midst of a humongous apostasy. And there's a huge apostasy going on right now, friend. I'm telling you, there's churches out there you don't want to be a part of. There are Protestant churches out there that stand for homosexuality.
Don't want to be there.
Encourage abortion.
You don't want to be there.
You don't want to be there.
No.
The ELCA churches, the Lutheran ELCA churches out in Wichita, Kansas, two serial killers actually took on church leadership positions in those churches for throughout the 1990s, Dave. One was a well-known serial killer, the BTK guy. The other guy was a Tiller the Killer.
Yeah.
They're both good Lutherans, you know, attending their nice little Lutheran churches for a long time. And thankfully, they are no more. Either of the serial killers do not exist anymore. But you know, they were members of good standing at ELCA churches.
They were divided from, you know, death and life.
Yeah.
That was a division. It was a helpful one.
Yeah.
So
I would say divide from some of these churches. You need to leave some of these churches. And Dave, here's the kicker, though. The kicker is there is a role for unity. We're to love the brother and hate the world. It's just, where is that line and where is it drawn in our fellowships? And that's important. I mean, you do get a few people who, like Roger Williams, eventually separate from every single person until it's his own wife and he's not sure about his wife. You know, that's the classic story about Roger Williams. So you have the other problem of dividing and dividing and dividing such that there is no unity left amongst the people of God. It takes a little discernment to look around and sniff out true believers and have a true church, a good godly church, where you're not separating on minors, but you understand the measures and you're dividing with the world and you're repenting. You're a repenting church. There's a repenting of humanism, the idea that man can save himself, the idea that that man is in control of his own salvation, that man is the essence of his own ethics and will determine his own ethics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that's humanism. Ultimately, it's humanism that divides from the idea of Christianity. And if you don't know the difference between those things, friends, you better draw those lines carefully and do it by the word of God. It's one reason why I wrote my book, The Apostate. An apostate is out right now, and it divides between humanism and Christianity. I think it's chapter 2 or chapter 3 defines what the agenda is and how we are to divide from what is happening in corrupting the entire Western world, destroying the Christian faith, denomination by denomination. And it's time for some of us to say, hey, this is the world, and we do not want to be part of the world. We want to be part of what Christ is doing with his church through the ages. And you better make that division. You better draw those lines carefully. That's why I wrote my book, Apostate. And the book is available now at our website, kevinswanson.com. It's the most important book of my life. I put 2 years of work into the book, and I believe it is a critical book for establishing good Christian churches and strong Christian forms of education. Dave, one of the most important part of my books was to distinguish between a Christian form of education and a humanist classical form of education that has been so dangerous and has eroded the Christian faith and liberal arts schools and Christian colleges for the last 800 years.
Yet another division.
Yep. Another division. And we better be dividing and dividing wisely, wisely. Otherwise, humanism will continue to destroy the Christian faith, and we will see the end of the Christian faith in the Christian West. I mean, the end of it, the very, very, very end of it. Yes, sure. Church attendance is still 40% here. It's 6% in London, but it's heading down. It's heading down. It's heading down. Christian churches are dissolving out in Europe. They're selling their church properties to Muslims. And friends, the same thing is going to happen here. And last, there's some Christian families who are willing to say the Christian faith is still a Christian faith, and this is how it distinguishes itself from humanism. You've got to be able to do that, especially in the area of education. Otherwise, the church, Christian church, dies out and there is no more faith. And friends, I'm telling you, it's a heaven or hell issue. It's a life and death issue. Ideas ultimately matter. Ideas have consequences in this life and in the life to come, and you better get it straight for your families. That's, again, why I wrote my book, Apostate, for Christian families that are still extant in the West, and by the way, also in the East, where the Eastern churches have been affected big time by Western humanism. And I would encourage people to get a copy of my book, Apostate, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.